role here this fall, and he's been able to go to Boston and to Baltimore to speak to different groups in these locales. And so Kate at AK Press was really instrumental. Here's the book, I know people see it. Also Marina Citrin's been really great helping out, and the militant research group here at the Grad Center, which is a grad student group, who I think read some Zubetchin in their meetings, has also agreed to kind of co-host this with Place Culture Politics. So definitely want to thank all of y'all, and I haven't even met everybody in that group, so I look forward to meeting everybody. Just a little bit about the context. So I'm just off the top, how many people have read anything by Zubetchin? There's some in English. Okay, great. So so people read the Socialism and Democracy essay or the book? Or both? So you read both in the seminar?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I think from the way I kind of encountered, I think there's a lot of different kind of topics that resonate with a lot of different kind of political questions right now. But the way I kind of ended up entering into this project was 3 years ago at the Cornell Labor Institute. They invited Oscar Oliveira and Pablo Mamani Ramirez, who were doing a tour throughout the United States, to come speak to different union members in New York City. And in that meeting was all people from DC 37 and from the PSC and from 1199, and there was a number of us. Peter was maybe been there, and I don't know if Jack was there. And I was part of the international committee of the PSC, and they were saying, you got to go to this, you know. And I said, okay. And Evo Morales had just been elected, and the political moment in the United States, of course, it was 2007, so it was it seems like 30 years ago now. It's amazing how different things were. And Oscar Oliveira, who many of you know from The Water Wars, and there's a book that's edited with Tom Lewis on The Water Wars and Cochabamba, which a lot of people regarded as the first victory of the movements, left movements, against neoliberals. Mm-hmm. So it was the water system had been privatized, mm-hmm. and they had successfully locked down the city, fought against that privatization, and demanded what? That was the kind of question. So they won the struggle against the privatization, but they didn't simply want the municipality to manage the system again, because the municipality was the one who had sold off the water system.
Okay.
So what kind of emerged out of that was this idea that there needed to be a new regulatory apparatus or a new kind of way of regulating this public good. But the state was inadequate to do that. The usual government form was inadequate to do that. So a kind of social public hybrid emerged out of that, which was partly movements in conjunction with the union, in conjunction with the municipality. And as he told this story, I thought, you know, we really lack the categories to kind of describe these new articulations that are happening as movements put forward these kinds of logics for organizing and regulating outside of the state, but then they're not just in opposition to state. There's some collaborative moments that happen with the state, but it's sort of with parts of states. And of course, Bolivia, in a way, is maybe the most advanced and seeing what the relationship between the movements and the state can be. And Oscar Oliveira kind of laid all this out. And then the second presenter was this Pablo Mamani, and he said, you can't understand any of this stuff unless you understand that it's territory versus the state. It's territory versus the state. And it was one of those moments, you know, you have when you read tons of stuff and most of it just kind of sails out your head. But sometimes someone says something and you're completely flabbergasted by it, right? Just wrecks your whole usual, your radar, your kind of intellectual radar. And I was completely struck by when he said this. And since then, I've really been preoccupied with understanding this conception of territory and how it plays into the notion of autonomy and the relationship of movements to the state. And then I encountered Raoul's work, especially the essay in Socialism and Democracy, which is called Subterranean Echoes, which deals a lot about El Alto. I started to see that, you know, there are actually, not only are there movements that are experimenting in ways where it's kind of tough to discern using our usual language and taxonomy what's going on, but there are also people thinking about this stuff in a kind of consistent, embedded way. And when I then encountered Dispersing Power, I thought, okay, we really got to get him here and help us understand this. So that's just a little bit about the context in which I think his work can be looked at in another context, too. So today, Raul's not going to necessarily focus on the book. He's going to talk about a little bit of a different frame. But I'll let him tell us what he's going to do. So,
thank you. Hi, good afternoon. I'm grateful for you to being here, for Mike and the Militant Research Group who invites me to this talk. Then, I will read a little bit. Only 2 or 3 hours, like Hugo Chavez, no? I read because that we can speak, talk, but reading is quicker for me than speaking my elemental English. I apologize, me. It's very, goes very step to step. Then I read a piece I have written to the 200 years from our independences. The name is The Other's View, The Other View. Good? When asked about the origin of his convictions, Constantino Lima responds, "My views don't come from a right or a left-wing ideology. I have them from my father, my mother, from the oral traditions of my grandparents and great-grandparents. But the grass, trees, and rivers also left their mark on us, the animals, apus, and chulpas. Even when I was a small boy, nature spoke to me." Describing his first political experience at the age of 7, he says, "We had to walk 5 miles to gather wood which we sold to the whites in the town. We earned just enough money to buy sugar for our tea. One day we were attacked by big dogs. My mother defended herself as best she could, and I clung to her shirt. Several 5 or 6 years old who apparently owned the dogs shouted, 'Mama, mama, look, the dogs want to eat the Indians. Do you think they would like the taste of the meat?' The children pushed my mother from behind, causing her wood to fall to the ground. The children's mother looked at this, and they made fun on us, calling us Indiecitos, little Indians. Later, my mother complained to the mayor about this recurring incident, but he only threatened her, saying, 'Now listen, Damuel, don't disrespect that lady again. Or do you think you can compare yourself to her?' That was all she said," he said, with a composure that reveals a great inner peace. Constantino points to his heart. That sits really deep. It's the source of a rage that I've never gotten rid of. At the time, I went home and asked my father with the people why the people with a skin different color from ours were so mean to us. The next day, he gathered us 6 children around the table and stood in front of the blackboard. My father was the first indigenous teacher in the province of Pacajes. Drawing Europe and the Abya Yala, he said, "The people with the white skin come from Europe. They are not from here. This is our home. This is where our roots are. They're foreign." Now I understood the behavior, but at the end of his talk, my father said, "Be careful, children. Don't get involved with politics. If you want to go into politics, they will persecute you, torture you, and kill you. There are no laws for people like us. The laws are their laws. They're the mayors, they're the judges, they're the soldiers, and also the lawyers. Who is there to defend us?" The incident Lima described took place in 1941 near the settlement of Calacoto on the Aymara Plateau. In 2008, Evo Morales awarded Lima the Andean Condor, the highest honor of the Bolivian state, in recognition of services to the indigenous cultures of Bolivia. In 1985, he became the second indigenous congressman elected for the Tupac Atari indigenous movement, which he had co-founded in 1978. In 1960, he had established the PAN, National Autochthonous Party, together with 22 other indigenous people. Furthermore, while studying at the Universidad Mayor de San Andrés in 1968, he founded the Juliana Pasa Student Movement. Lima is a member of the first generation of intellectuals to attend school in the aftermath of 1952 revolution. One of his greatest achievements was the rediscovery of the Huipala, the old standard of rebel troops led by Tupac Atari in 1780. Lima spent years researching in archives before finally discovering the rebels' frack in a borrowed book. He made several copies and showed them to fellow members of PAN. The 49 squares of the old rebels' flag, displaying seven colors of the rainbow, amazed all those present. On Easter 1970, the Wipala was raised for the first time in nearly 200 years at the oath-taking ceremony for students of the first school in the province of Pacajes, 100 miles from La Paz. 2 months later, it was hoisted at a meeting of FAN leaders in Corocoro. The sub-prefect of La Paz, who was present at the gathering, wrote in a report to superiors, The Indians flew a foreign flag. The flag was raised on November 15 of the same year at the inauguration of the Tupac Amaru Monument in Ayo Ayo, this time in front of 30,000 indigenous people. Today, it's a symbol of the Bolivian state and enshrined in the new constitution which re-established Bolivia. Ecuador's new constitution makes nature a subject of the law. Article 71, entitled Rights for Nature, states that nature, or Pachamama, has the right to exist, persist, maintain, and regenerate its vital cycles, structure, functions, and its processes in evolution. This may sound curious or even downright strange. In the dominant logic of the West, nature is a resource from which raw materials are extracted for developmental purposes, that is, for the unlimited material growth on which human welfare supposedly depends. Nature is an object that serves a subject, the people who are able to control it. Ecuador's new constitution reflects the importance now assumed by indigenous cultures. An essential characteristic of these cultures is the harmonious and well-balanced relationship with nature. The land does not belong to us, we belong to this land, reads the Mama Kuta Titicaca Declaration. Nature's rights are part of an Andean cultural concept that has been explicitly adopted in the Constitution. It is known as Sumac Causai, which in Quechua means buen vivir, good or even pure and harmonious life. In a chapter entitled Regime of the Good Life, the Constitution devotes 75 articles to this concept alone. It refers to a way of life that enables people to live harmoniously with one another and also with nature. There is not justification for living human relationships a higher status than the relationship between people and nature. The principles anchored in the Constitution represent a radical break with Western culture and the ideas of progress and development. They are also a rejection of modernity. We are currently experiencing a crisis of civilization, an environmental, social, and cultural crisis that has its roots in a model basin of ruthlessly exploiting nature. The control and exploitation of nature has brought prosperity and wealth to some of humanity, but the idea of constant growth and unlimited consumption, which is exposed by economic liberals and socialists alike, is now revealing its absolute incompatibility with the preservation of life on the planet. However, much more is at stake than just this. The problem facing mankind today is not only attributable to Eurocentrism, anthropocentrism. The belief that the world exists solely for the benefit of humankind is also to blame. Development and progress are concepts that are incompatible with nature, even if they are postulated under the banner of sustainable development. The present crisis of civilization is also a sign that the analytic instruments used to grasp and interpret reality are no longer trustworthy because they all draw on a colonial matrix, as does the subject-object relationship upon which they are based. They confine themselves to codifying the current pattern of civilization as something natural and thus prevent the possibility of considering other ways of living. The final document of the fourth summit of indigenous people declares that the crisis of civilization is an expression of the failure of Eurocentrist and colonialist modernity. This crisis has resulted from the genocide of the conquista and today threatens the existence of all humanity. According to the document, given the failure of Western culture, the Abya Yala peoples offer an alternative of life to the civilization of death. We will regenerate our roots as people of the earth in order to project ourselves to our future, guided by our principles and practices of equilibrium between men and women, month, air and spirituality, cultures and people, all of which we call good living, living well. Good living is an art founded on principle and is not associated with a list of demands that could be formulated as civil rights or state's duties. The requirement is harmony with nature, but nature is the mother upon whom we depend and with whom we can never have a relationship based on competition or control. At times, this art assumes concrete forms of expression. For example, in 2007, the Ecuador Mining Ministry proposed that although the oil fields under the Yasuní National Park made up one quarter of the country's reserves, they should not be fully exploited. Alberto Acosta, former president of the Ecuadorian Constituent Assembly, called this a revolutionary proposal in the search for a post-material and post-exploitative development model. Good, we change a little bit. Sitting in the modest bar run by his organization on the outskirts of Santa Cruz, Bolivia, Subi, the young vice-president of the Indigenous Ayoreo Center of Eastern Bolivia, attempts to explain his people's culture. The Ayorea are a nomadic tribe native to the Bolivian and Paraguayan Chaco. Catholic and Protestant missionaries first made contact with them in 1940 at the request of the Bolivian government. The construction of the Santa Cruz-Puerto Suarez Railway, the spread of cattle breeding and the advance of oil production drove them from their homeland and forced them to pursue a sedentary way of life. There are only 3,000 Ayorea left today. To illustrate his people create, Subi retells a long spiraling story that took place 2 years earlier involving two neighborhoods. Jonathan bought a tractor to plant corn on his 7.5 acres of land in the hope that he would be able to sell it and earn some money. He waited impatiently for the harvest. When the day came, his father invited his whole family, as well as neighbors and friends, to work and celebrate together while bringing in the harvest as required by tradition. During the work, corn was distributed to everyone present in keeping with an old custom. At the end of the day, 5 acres of corn were gone. Only 2.5 acres were left for Jonathan. He wept in fury at his father. Taking a childlike delight in the father's cunning, Subi says nothing more, but his silence is eloquent enough. Two lifestyles have collided, that of accumulation at that of the good life. Furthermore, individual progress has collided with the principle of reciprocity. Subi does not mention buen vivir in his tale. Such abstract concepts are foreign to thoughts and actions, but he knows and feels what is at stake here. The uprising of Inturaimi in 1990 was the most radical break in the history of Ecuador since the arrival of the Spaniards. The indigenous residents of the Andean highland and the rainforest region paralyzed the country, blocking streets, closing markets, and occupying haciendas. Hundreds of thousands of demonstrators hoisted their flag for the first time. Tupac Amaru's rainbow blazed again in the light of the sun. By rising up in 1990, the indigenous people put an end to their invisible existence. They took action and became privileged dialogue partners for both left and right wing parties, and also for the state itself. At the same time, they became a popular subject of study at the academic institutions. For many observers and experts, the uprising was the most important act of self-confirmation by the peoples who had been conquered by colonizers 5 centuries earlier and marginalized by the Republic for 2 centuries. The legendary Huipala played a central role in this moment of collective self-discovery. With it, a new university-educated generation stepped to the fore, a generation that continues to regard itself as part of a culture, people, and civilization whose identity is not rooted in the modern European Enlightenment. We, indigenous people, walk to the future in the footprints of our ancestors, said in Ecuador the Quichua lawyer Carlos Perez. He is chair of the Water User Association in the south, in the Azuay province. Like their ancestors, the younger generation of indigenous leaders has found a model in Andean traditions, in the culture of the communities, and in the rich history of uprising and opposition, particularly those in the 18th century. Although today's elite is academically educated, attends international forums, and is familiar with modern technologies, it continues to research its past in order to draw strength and find answers to the difficult questions of a new reality. The indigenous repeatedly rose up in the course of 5 centuries. The rebellions in the 18th century, which ushered in the continent's independence, took on an increasingly virulent character. In contrast to the movements led by the criollos, the indigenous peoples did not observe enlightenment principles such as civil and human rights. Rather, they took their own traditions as ideal. The academic community and the political left have not yet given any special consideration to its history, which goes back to the roots of other thought processes and other mores and customs amongst the oppressed Andean Amazonian people. Sinclair Thompson concludes that there is next to no evidence that the Pan-Andean insurrection was inspired by French philosophers or prompted by the successes of North American Creole. Quite the contrary, the rebels of 1780 fought to the continued existence of the communities. They fought for the indigenous people's customs, the decentralized assembly system, and the traditional system of rotating leaders. An engagement with this very different approach can prove fertile for thought and for emancipation effort in a time when the crisis of civilization is calling many things into question, including the Western legacy of social change and the mode and code of our uprisings. This is not mean to imply that the Andean and Amazonian people offer something akin to a pattern of thought that can be directly appropriate or replace the worldview inherited from the Enlightenment and the French Revolution. In the Andean Amazonian world, a civilization still exists that has produced a whole set of its own ideas. It is a community-based world, one that views water, oil, soil, and plants as common property and not as reserves. As a result, it rules out private ownership of such goods. Practical values are created in order to maintain the system of reciprocity and redistribution and to ensure a balance with living creatures. Concepts such as growth and accumulation have no place here. Power is not centralized. It is shared through networks and community assemblies. Decision-making is based on consensus, and offices are rotated. At any rate, the system is supposed to prevent leaders from gaining power over the community. According to Pierre Clastres, all the community's energy is expended on keeping leaders from accumulating power and transforming themselves into statesmen and dominant players in institutional politics. the methods of dissolving the community that clusters observed amongst the Wayaki nomads were always used in a diffuse and natural way when the peoples and communities had to defend themselves against the episodical recurring external aggression. Nothing can be found in emancipatory Western tradition that is comparable to this dispersing organism. On the contrary, the West has always cultivated a rigorous centralization. With the approach they have taken over the last two centuries, the Andean Amazonian rebels have repeatedly shown that they reject the tabula rasa principle, which is one of the most important utopias of modernity. This idea that is possible and necessary to break radically with the past in order to build a new world, one that is necessarily judged better by modernity, is foreign to their culture. Tabula rasa was the hallmark of the French and Russian revolutions and generally of all those who committed themselves to the paradigm of modernization. The entire continent has been profoundly changed by the struggles of the indigenous movements in the recent past. All these movements have adopted to some degree transformed Andean Amazonian traditions. For example, the movements redesigned the old Wipala, making it a symbol of a new age. Their message is that there is enough room on one flag for an entire rainbow of colors, without one color dominating. Only one page, 3 minutes, if you need to sleep, is not more enough. Well, according to Bolivian sociologist Javier Medina, any attempt to identify the rebellion as a social movement would be a politicid. It would disempower the rebel authorities and rob the insurgents of the form of electing them. It would negate the special manner of action or inaction and destroy both their subversive character and uncompromising nature in the interest of a fixed, universally accepted concept. Colonialism does indeed live on when the words of the other are not respected and when they are replaced by foreign words. It is precisely this that is implied by the use of the concept of social movement. The indigenous peoples themselves speak of rebellion or uprising, or better still, of Pachacuti. The Andean term Pachacuti can enrich our idea of social change. Translated literally, it means return of time, but its complexity allows for several other translations: renewal of time, upheaval, or turning point in time. The inside turns out, the outside is internalized, explained Bolivian anthropologist Silvia Rivera, clasping one hand around the other to illustrate her words. Something returns, something is renewed. The invisible of subterranean assumes a prominent place, while the visible and material is subordinated. This is quite different from a tabula rasa. To speak of Pachacuti is to take up a circular or spiral concept of time, one that is not linear, cumulative, or progressive. The term Pachacuti describes cycles, a sequence of phases or times. It is a worldview that is compatible with the original concept of revolution in the sense of a heavenly body expanding its orbit. But Pachacuti also suggests something else, that the new already exists within the old. David Harper speaks about this in his last book, about Paris. I think so. I remember this. Something that the world already exists within the old, and the real change, the nature of change, consists not in excluding what has previously been dominant, but in suppressing intemporally so that what has been controlled can now take its place. The processing of change is, in this form, can be neither abolished nor eliminated. It can only be deferred or taken up. in and in Amazonian cultures, it is forbidden to destroy weeds, because even a weed had its place in the cosmic order. Ultimately, Pachacuti is a question of balancing out what human greed has knocked out of kilter. After all, it would be a sad irony of fate if Andean Amazonian peoples were to reject everything that has come and continues to come from the West. If that happened, the concept of tabula rasa would make its way into the worldview. Perhaps this is no longer possible. Characteristics of Western culture are already a part of their own civilization. The fact that many of these characteristics were adopted in the age of oppression is not reason to reject the liberal elements which also arose in European cities around 5 centuries ago, and which are part of the debate on autonomy and emancipation. The same is true of effort to liberate women. Perhaps the New Age, the Pachacuti, will be generous enough to conceal the origins of good things, just as many colors fit under the condor's ostrich wings as on the Wipala. Thank you very much.
Questions, comments? I'm happy to go first, but I'll speak in one real quick. So, given the, I guess, cosmovision is the term that, at least as it's translated into English, to describe the, not the ideology, but the kind of philosophical and political, ontological framework of the Andean indigenous. Right. So, reciprocity, the conception of time, balance, harmony. So, in indigenous groups, despite their differences in Ecuador and Bolivia, share a lot of that cosmovision. Fair to say?
Yes.
How, when you look at sort of comparing those two political situations, how has that cosmovision impacted differently in those two political contexts? Because in Ecuador, for example, Ecuador gets a lot more credit for honoring certain kinds of environmental and ecological principles more so than Bolivia. Yet the indigenous political power in Bolivia is much more pronounced than in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. So, can you say something about that?
I think there are a lot of differences. I will speak about two or three of them. The first, I think these ideas about good living, these ideas are in the both constitutions, but the indigenous peoples don't speak normally about good living. I said that for the Ayoreas, for example. I think there is an idea builded by the West thinkers in Ecuador. For example, Alberto Correa, he's an economist. He's compromised with the movements, but he's an economist, white, and he's West thinking. Also, he's making an effort to change this. But I think it's not the same thing when the indigenous peoples speak about anything and when we speak about this. For the indigenous, good living is a practice, everyday practice. For us, it's an idea without praxis. It's anything different. The second thing, I mean that in Bolivia, we have the Aymaran people, not in Ecuador. The Aymaran people, his history is out of the state, out of the Republican state, out of the Spanish state, and also out of the Tahuantinsuyo, the state of the Incas. Yeah. Then they have a different genealogy. Then the Aymaras have his culture not very mixed with the other culture. It's also mixed, but in different ways as the Quichuas. This is a second difference. Then is anything that is seen, that is similar. The idea of good living and the idea of territory don't come initially from the Quechua or the Aymaras people. It comes from the peoples who live in the jungle. And it's similarly in Bolivia and Ecuador, the same thing. Then the fourth thing is also a difference. I think the movements in Bolivia are quite different than the movements in Ecuador. For example, the CONAIE is the large organization who includes coast, hills, Andean and jungle movements. Indian peoples, in Indian nations, not movement, Indian nations, and they has a really hierarchical organization. The CONAIE is mixed between a community organization and trade unions organization, with lots of NGOs in the middle. And in Bolivia, it's the same. They have a lot of NGOs, but I think that the organizations are not so hierarchical as in Ecuador. I don't say they are not hierarchical, but perhaps the communities has more autonomy from the organization, from its self-organization, than that in Ecuador. It's not really, really so, like I say, but I think the great organization in Ecuador, CONAIE, includes all, is a very large organization, and in Bolivia there are competence between organizations. I find there is very interesting, because it's not possible that one organization has the real power in the social movements.
And so do you think that in Bolivia those groups have more successfully territorialized their autonomy than in Ecuador? Is that part? So in Ecuador, in a way, you have a more inclusive mobilization, but
yes,
the groups involved are less successful at their own territorial levels?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily?
I think it's very difficult to speak in general.
Okay.
In some parts of Ecuador, the organizations has a really territorial control. In the jungle, are also in the Andean part. And in Bolivia, also. They have, for example, in the Aymara Plateau, between La Paz and the Peruvian border, Lake Titicaca, there is the Aymara Center. It's very hardly the control territory. They had these cuarteles Aymaras, is like a cuartel in the army
list.
Barracks. They are symbolic, but sometimes material barracks. They built a power more than the normally social movements' power. A different power as the state. They have not only territorial control, also they have sometimes power, self-power. I think that we must study on parts, Aymaras, urban, rurals, then jungle movements, then Quechua's movement is very different. A very different experience, the people who has lived into the haciendas, is another genealogy, mm-hmm. because they have a long relationship with the church, mm-hmm. and with the owner, with the white culture. They were long submitted. They build the people who have lived in the haciendas in Ecuador or in Bolivia. They has a culture who involves them in building trade organizations like trade unions, perhaps the church influence. I don't know why. In the jungles, peoples is very different.
Yeah.
They build coalitions, flexibles.
Okay.
Not only.
these two cases. There are more, there are a lot of cases, different cases.
I have kind of a question. I have two questions. One I might hold if I can do it later because it has more to do with methodology and how and why you write what you write. But this, I just wanted to read a short passage on page 4 in Dispersing Power, where Raoul says, "From this perspective, the most revolutionary thing we can do is strive to create new social relationships within our own territories, relationships that are born of struggles and are maintained and expanded by it." So I wonder if you could expand on that and maybe relate it to, also yesterday you were talking about kind of where these affirmations of new cultures take place, so indigenous, landless movements, and in the urban peripheries. So if maybe you could talk about what this, expanding new social relationships within our territories, kind of what that means and what that looks like in places you've studied.
You don't understand what I mean with this.
I understand what you mean. I'd like it if you would expand on what you mean.
Talk more. Say more.
Yes.
Good. In this way, I'm very unhappy with you because I will speak about Marx. Yes. When Marx writes the balance of the French... of the Paris Commune, 1871, yes, they write it. The people, the workers, hasn't a new utopia to build. They only must liberate the new world who lives inner workers' world, more or less. This idea to liberate this new world is like this. When he speaks about revolutions, he speaks about when the woman has a children. What's this moment?
Giving birth.
One thing is giving birth, another thing is changing the world. Giving birth is a violence moment, like to destroy the state. But this new child lives before the giving birth. You can't make a revolution without new relationships. It's like you give birth anything that not exists, no? And then this difference who made Marx, I know there are a lot of anarchists here, but I have read Marx and I think this idea is wonderful to explain this. This difference between revolution, giving birth, and relationships, new relationships, is very nice to complain these two moments. When we build new non-capitalist relationships with you and with the nature, between us and with the nature, in a moment when the relationships are so big, the system cannot contain it, and you must break the domination. That is the idea of revolution. And I think in the same way, catching the power now, it doesn't matter. It's not interesting. We will be prisoners of the state. Because the revolutions, not the French Revolution, but the Russian Revolution, the China Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, has a problem when they will has new relationships, self-sustainables. They must be the state who sustains these new things. When the state goes up, all the new relationships goes down. Then this is my idea about these two kinds. Revolution and new relations. And the relation between the two things.
want to ask a question following on that, but it's kind of hard to ask it because in English there's only one word for power. And I'm interested, I want to ask you something about sort of power, social movements, and the Constitution. I know in French and Spanish or Italian, many other languages, there are different words for power. So sometimes in English, this will get rendered as constituent power and constituted power. And the idea is that social movements create constituent power, so there's revolutionary upheaval, and then constituted power is what the state does. And these two things oftentimes seem quite distinct. So once constituent power becomes constituted, there's like a break between them.
This idea of constituent power, you said, is the same as Castoriadis said? No.
No.
Potentia?
No, this is Potentia, is Negri and Deleuze and Spinoza.
It's you're not finished yet, though, right, Steve?
Ah,
question,
good,
right?
Good.
What we're trying to ask is sort of, let's say political rebellions have some sort of constituent power. When we get these transformations in the Constitution, you're describing like Article 71, where nature becomes part of law, or sort of different forms of indigenous community governance are recognized. When the Constitution is transformed, does the power of the social movements embedded in the Constitution neutralize them, or how is their potential transformed by their embedding in this constitutional framework? Because to me, it doesn't seem that they're just neutralized. It's just they're transformed, maybe, but maybe not neutralized.
And are you saying they're transformed to this idea of constituted power versus constituent? Or is
that's what the framework would suggest, but to me, this doesn't seem correct.
Okay. Bueno, un problema es que en inglés hay una palabra para poder. Se dice que hay un concepto de el poder constituente, que es el poder del movimiento, del pueblo. Y hay otra palabra, otra frase, el poder constituido.
Yes, this is Castoriadis. Institutional and...
¿Y qué piensa Steve? Es que
yes.
Es posible cuando el poder constituido hace como una ley, hace un cambio en la Constitución, él piensa que posiblemente no está completamente convertido en el otro poder.
When we speak about Constitution, like a law, we are in problems. Because between movement and Constitution, there are two different ways, two different things. It can be not dialogue between the two things, law and movements. Then we can speak about power. In Spanish, we can speak the first thing. Power, how Holloway, no? In two different ways. Power as power on the people, and the second way, power as ability, as way of doing. It's the same as, I think, the same as Holloway. But there are two different ideas about this. I think power as ability, these are the movements. And power on, this is the state. But in some moments, the movements need the power on.
Power over,
because they need to defend the self-territories or the self-organizations. They need a different kind of power as the power as movement. Good? The other thing is what happens with when the movements finished. Yes? The movements... The word movements speaks from anything that is not permanent, is a cycle, but the cycle begins and finished. the movements normally goes on and then goes down. This is a cycle. It's normal. It's like a life. A life is not forever. A life is sometime. Yes? Then, the movements can come into institutions. That is normal. For example, today, with difference in South America, in some discussions, between movement and organization. What's organization when the movements are like an NGO? Yes? A fixed structure. Difference between leaders and supporters. What's movement? Movement is not only strike or struggle or on the street going. It's different. Also, this is complained in the movement or in the organization. But then movement is, I will say in Spanish, perhaps anything can help me. For we are some peoples in South America who works in intellectuals, academic support from the movement like me, that was in the same direction. Movement is el desplazamiento del lugar material y simbólico heredado.
Displacement of the symbolic and material.
The inherited
place.
Yeah, the inherited,
yes?
Symbols and.
You have a place inherited from the family, from the state, or anything so. In the movement, you move this place inherited, material and symbolic. When you, in the movement, not move your place in the society, there is not a really movement. We think so. For example, trade unions. The trade unions don't move the place from the workers in the society. They confirm this place. Only with better, with much more money.
Yeah.
But the place is the same.
You pay your mortgage. That's
yes,
what trade unions want.
You become more money. But the place is the same. When you move, then you build a new identity. You change your identity. The new identity we know can be a new person, but this is other discussion. For example, the mothers, Plaza de Mayo in Argentina, before the movement, they worked in her kitchen, in the kitchens. With the movement, they leave the kitchens and they go into the street and then become a new identity. Militant or activists for the human rights, for example. In the movements, we are involved. We are not only spectators. We are involved and we self-change our place in a really movement. Then, for me, it's better to place to speak about organizations and movements. And when I speak about movements, I speak in this way, in this last way. When we speak about the institutions, we are speaking in a state-centralized thinking. Yes? State thinking. And we are looking the society from the state. I will look the society from the grassroots, from the movement. This is not easy, but it's not the same looking the society from a building, name it state, that looking the society in movement at with the movement. This is another viewpoint, worldview.
It sounds though like you're saying that that this is a necessary transformation, that the movement cannot always be a movement and that it requires or necessarily moves into some kind of institutionalized reality. Is that what you mean?
Que este proceso de cambio, de movimiento a organización, institución, es necesario. ¿Está diciendo eso?
No, I think not. But here is a problem. When a movement has 10 years or more, the stabilized the leaders, the supporters, and it's easy to become a new organization. I hate this way, yes, but I see that there are a lot of things who push in this direction. For example, the hegemonic culture. The state works for this because they need the same leaders to speak with the same people. Then the social politics from the states works in the same way. Now in South America, we have strong states with a lot of money for social politics, and they contribute to change this way. I think it's not necessary. For example, the Zapatista Sexta Declaración de la Selva Lacandona, they will cut this possibility. They said, if we are here for a lot of years in the cell in the jungle, our possibility to change the world is not more. Then they began the otra campaña, to change for itself its own movement. This is very nice for me, this kind of ideas. The movements can be renovated. Now the piqueteros, the unemployed in Argentina, they are coming in a new kind of movement, with popular high schools and other things of this. But when you don't, when you are very nice with the new identity, piqueteros or zapatistas, very fun, but then you are going down and or coming into organizations. I think the movement has organization, but you know the difference between the two things. Yeah. No? Yes.
He already answered. I was going to ask about the Zapatista movement, but I will add a question anyway. Raúl, I would like to know, in the context of what you read, to ask, what do you think Evo Morales means when he says that the mass is an instrument and not a political party? Is that related to the indigenous revolution or to the way the social movements relate to the state in Bolivia?
The government of Evo Morales.
Yeah, when he said el MAS es un instrumento político, no es un partido político.
Yes, yes.
Esto está related to his being a social movement or to his indigenous background.
Yes, yes, I think Evo Morales' government is the best government in Latin America. The states, the national governments, this is the best. But it's another genealogy. It's the state genealogy. It's not the indigenous worldview. For the indigenous worldview and for the really indigenous peoples, Evo is good. And it's really better as other. You look before in the Bolivian history, is the best government. Mm. But it's not enough. Mm. They said, for example, this Constantino Lima and other Aymaras, they said, Evo is our brother. It's good being there. But this is a step for us. The way is very long. We come from 500 years of exploitation, no? And this is a step. This is not the final, the end of our struggle. It's only a step. And this idea from step, I think, is very nice. Because they said, with these governments, we can work in another kind or in another way. But it's not enough. It's not enough, and they repeat this. Evo Morales, we need the state an Evo Morales government to struggle with the oligarchy and with, and for struggle with the imperialism and with the multinational companies. But this government is fine for this, not for, for build the new society. The new society must be built for down to over. Yes? From the from grassroots.
Bottom up.
But?
Bottom up.
Bottom up. Yes. Yes? And this is twice. You can set 100 or zero, black or white. For some things, these governments are good. For other things, there is a... there are not necessarily. They think, a lot of Aymara students or intellectuals or politicians, that perhaps in the future, they don't speak about years, perhaps can be centuries, we can build or rebuild an Aymaran nation. Is that in the Bolivian state or not? We don't know. Mm. But perhaps the today's frontiers and the today's nations are not enough, are an obstacle to build a new society. But now at this moment, so is good. But we must work to build anything different. This is the way, I think. It's not black, it's not white, it's complex.
But pretty much, so all the positive things that states do right now seem to be defensive. They're not creative. So
sure.
Blocking the penetration of foreign direct investment
defensive.
Okay. And that's consistent with a lot of the Via Campesina, where there's an explicit role for the state to play in terms of the creation of food sovereignty, which we were talking about at lunch, appropriately.
They need these defenses.
Yes, right. And because of the policies of the WTO and multinationals and so on, so the state is supposed to clear the area for these kinds of creative giving birth community developments and organizations, the autonomy there. But the state, and your view, correct me if I'm wrong, is not playing a creative role in the production of that new form of life or new, right, of the living well.
No.
It's a defensive role.
It's defensible. There are here a lot of possibilities. Some years before, I thought that the best way is the Zapatista way. They have in the movement the two things. A little state like the army, the Zapatista army, to defend itself, and the communities. The communities are building the new world. The communities are building the juntas de buen gobierno, the caracoles, and this thing. But now I am thinking also that the army, the Zapatista army, the French army, is also a problem. Also the state is a problem, yes? But, when you have two machineries, a community machinery and a state machinery, the struggle is inevitable. Because there are two different logics. And these two logics, the most efficiently is the state machine. The high state, the real state, or the Zapatista army. They are most efficiently than the community in the logic of capitalism and West ideas. No? Because the communities need so long time to decide. They go so slowly in anything that they can't resolve a lot of problems. Not the problems of the community, the problems which come from outside.
Yeah.
Then the state, the friend army said, I help you. But this helping is a problem.
Well, and just one example of that, in terms of the temporalities, you see that with movements and election cycles, right? And if you've done organizing stuff, and you've got a project, and you've been working on it, and then all of a sudden somebody's up for election. It's the city council, it's the president, it's the you know, whatever. And a lot of movements, they have their people who they support, and you can literally see the energy and resources drain from movements to participate in the election cycle, and it just ruins a lot of organizing efforts that you were trying to kind of, you know, participate in and get developed. And then I think the social forums have tried to disrupt that to some extent, to create an interconnection of movement building on a different temporal cycle, and that's why the World Social Forum now is every other year, and there's been different ways of trying to build that, but... Anyway, that just seems a one way in which the logic of the state with the election cycle impedes on the different temporality of movement mm-hmm. development, just to give an example.
The last bueno, no, si
no, and this is RJ, by the way. I should have introduced RJ. We can't.
I'm
sorry.
Asking your question. No, I said it wasn't a question. Yeah.
I think it's not a question.
Not a question.
Yeah, I was just trying to give another example. So.
I wanted to ask, you mentioned John Holloway a couple times, and I think clearly, you know, that the two-year ideas are very similar, but I'm beginning to think that you may have a few minor disagreements. So I'm wondering if you'd be willing to discuss John Holloway briefly and highlight any differences you may have with him.
It's a question.
Yeah. What are some two differences from Holloway?
Ah, good. My differences are he speaks about power, counterpower, and non-power. This is a difference. I don't understand a world without power. He speaks, we must build a world without power. What's that? My difference is that I speak because he says I agree with Holloway that power and counterpower are the same genealogy, yes, because the counterpower is the similarly but opposed as the power. You clear? My difference is that I speak about not all the power as state's power. For example, the Juntas de Buen Gobierno or the Aymara's powers are, or the NASA's powers in Colombia, this is very important, are non-state's power. You understand this? Not all the power is states. For example, patriarchalism is not power. It's a different kind of power. And the movements, the indigenous movements, or the settlements of the landless movements that can build a power in a different way as the state power, a different genealogy. The community is a power. We can build horizontal powers or non-hierarchical powers. One of the keys of the state's power are the bureaucracy. A group is separated from the society and is specialized in govern. Justice, civil or army people, yes? And this separation is one of the keys. And we can build rotative leaders, rotative authorities. And this is an inheritance from the indigenous movement, but also the people who are the movements who are in a different way not indigenous, they can build also rotative powers. And this is one of the biggest differences with Holloway. Not very important, but we think different in some parts. I think John will build this. I don't build a completely theory for the revolution, a different theory. No, I think that they has this idea to build a completely, it's not necessary. Mm. It's necessary a practice, but not a completely theory for make the revolution or to participate in the revolution or to build a new society.
I think John is like the old ideas. First the theory, then the practice. I think it's more complex. But it's only a thing.
I have one on. Put me on stack too.
Question, but is yours also?
No.
Give me the stack.
It's
related to this and this state, then, and it's not about you and John or whatever, but do you think there's some way that movements can use the state in a positive way? Not just defensive. In a defensive, keep.
In a different way.
In a positive way, like for things, cosas. Can you receive good things from the state and maintain your territory and have some line of communication?
Yes. In this way, I am Foucault supporter. What state? What state is a practice, a relationship. It's not a building. When state is only a building, we can use a lot of things or not, because the building introduces a kind of relationships, the distribution of the space and the things. Henri Lefebvre said, good. I think the state as a practice, perhaps we need as an ability, but not as an hegemonic practice. For example, if you are very, very ill, you'd need a medicine, and perhaps you need a heart intervention, chirurgic intervention. But in the everyday living, you only need helps, little helps, from some people, not necessarily a medic. A doctor. Good? In this way, I think the societies, in some moments, a big earthquake or a war against the neighbors, they need an army or a hierarchic organization for self-defense or for save the people under a tsunami. Yes? In some moments. But I reject the idea to make this hierarchic organization anything permanent. Permanent? Yes? That is the state. Then I won't think in what's nice and worry in the state. I think the hierarchical or state organization, that ability which you have to resolve one problem, but not anything permanent. For example, some peoples who hasn't stayed in his history, like Aymaras or nomadic peoples, they have the ability, they are horizontal in the normal life. But in some moments, they have the ability, like an umbrella, to make a coalition and make a hierarchical organization for a lot of things. And after this, like an umbrella, you take it down and you return to the normal life. For me, it's better to speak in the inability, or ability is a practice that you know how to do, than a special and separate structure. Because Deleuze speak about this long, no? The state not comes steps to step, it comes entirely in the history. Yes?
Yes.
It's a nice idea, yes? Anti-Oedipo on these books. And then when the state comes, he said, the cold monster, yes? You are
yeah.
Friend from Deleuze. You were from these ideas.
I see.
the cold monster, you can't disperse this. Yeah. You can't struggle against him. When the cold moisture come in our movement, the movement is like con las computadoras que tienen un virus, like a virus. It's a virus. And to struggle against this virus, you must build another structure, and then it's you don't finish this history.
So then, do you think, for example, now in Argentina with the Amadeus and the Picaderos, the government is offering kind of money to make cooperatives? They can have their own form of organization, allegedly, and they get money for their creative projects.
Mm-hmm.
Does that relationship necessarily then let the virus come in?
Now they are fighting against the state. To control these enterprises, little enterprises. Yes, it's a relationship, but the relationship is not problem. It's not problematic. Can be not problematic, but now they are in rejecting the government's objective to control the cooperatives. In this way, there are, but there is a nice idea there. The Piqueteros initiatives. They are all captured by the government. You know this. What they do, they build anything different, like the popular high schools. Because in the old enterprises, in the old initiatives, the government is so hard, they can't push, they have enough strength to advance in this direction. They must look for anything new. In this way, they go quicker, but in the old enterprises, it's contaminated. And then, when the water is contaminated, how can you clean it? It's very difficult. And the state is specialized in contaminate our water. Yes, I think so. I think it's necessary. A kind of relationship with the state. It's our money. It's our money. But then you become in a way very difficult, very... you can see clearly enough.
I think you've kind of addressed my question, or you've done it in many ways, but I wanted to ask about a line in the Subterranean Echoes piece. You say the challenges to the system are unthinkable without spaces beyond the control of the powerful. When I read that line, I just was thinking about New York City, where the state and power is everywhere. Right here.
Yes.
And where we're always under threat of surveillance or whatever, like police, or, you know, all these things. So I think what Marina said is a relationship between the state and communities, but I guess I was trying to think through how to approach that in New York City when having our own space beyond control seems almost impossible.
This idea comes from a wonderful work from James Scott, The Art of Resistance, like this. This is the book. I think the people need a self-space, a self-organization, not contaminated from the others. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Then, in this space, they can elaborate, they can speak with liberty. Yes, free, they can speak free. They can say a new identity. They can play the new identities, and this ways. Yes, I think all the movements who have fought against the Washington Consensus in Latin America, the movements who are very, very strength in the struggles have his own spaces. Mm-hmm. This is like a law, non-state law. But I have seen everything. This is necessary.
What about in New York City?
Also. But a space is not a territory. Mm-hmm. I make the difference between space. Space is a place where you don't live, you don't work, and you don't have education and health. this is territory. It's and whole the whole life goes there. But in the space, only some hours in the day you are, like a communal garden or these places. If you have territory, it's better. But in the cities, it's very difficult to have territories, to control territories. You only control some places. But this is enough. This is very nice.
My question, Paul, can I go to Quellis right from that?
RJ was next, but you want to defer?
I'm obviously very excited about a lot of what you've been talking about, and there's a lot of agreement. One point that you made in the essay that you read today, I'm curious about why you made the point. And that you said that in the West, we have always sought centralization. That and that in these worldviews coming out of the Andes, there have been these other ways. But then I thought about like a different anarchist legacies or council communism, different Western modalities that have used things like rotation. And so I thought, why set up this dichotomy between Andean history and Western practices? Why not actually identify those practices from the West that are actually harmonious and originating from a separate space?
Because also in the indigenous peoples, the practices are contaminated. Yes? There are nothing pure today in the world. I speak about rotation, about the new world in the territories, autonomy, about the, for example, the power as non-state powers. But this is not black and white. This is a possibility. This goes as practice some days, some years, but it's not a consolidated practice. I think we have not alternatively consolidated practice. This gives not. And it's nice to recognize them, because the only consolidated practice is the state and the capital. This goes without without pushing. It goes naturally. It's so hegemonic in our lives. These two practices, who are mixed, who are very friends one another, they yes, who are only one practice, the hegemonic culture. It goes alone. But the other things are like little parts carpet, like hilos,
threads
of a carpet. It's not a really carpet. It's not a completely carpet. Then we can cut these new practices, or we will tejer,
weave
one and the others. It's our militant work. But I say this is not easy. We have not an alternative builded. They come. Here it is. No, this is not. In this way, I say I have a point. I have doubts. I have problems. Yes, it's nice, but take it easy. Yes?
Yeah, I want to go back to your original paper also, but the question really follows from what this woman was asking and your answer to her. Because what I really want to ask is, what can we, in the Enlightenment-influenced West, take from the conception of territory? You partly answered that when you said it's very hard to create territory in a city. It's very hard to, you know, control all of our environment. But how can we use this concept under the constraints that we live under?
This is a very hard question.
That's what I was trying
to ask. I meant
it.
I only said the idea of territory, they have perhaps two or more different genealogies. One genealogy, I have speak about this, is the indigenous movement. But there is other genealogy from the landless movement. The landless movement, mostly in Brazil, they speak about territory. Why they speak about territory? Because they see in the landscape there is the agribusiness territory, all equal, homogeneous, no? They produce values. And the other territory, the land worker territory, is not homogeneous, is very different one another, and they produce mostly non-values. I think there are, I will speak about two thought thinkers. One is Bernardo Manzano Fernandez, you know perhaps, is close to the MST movement. He speaks a lot about territory. His experience is with these 5,000 settlements, about 25 million hectares in Brazil, occupied by the movements, who lives 2 million people, it's a lot, yes? And with 1,500 schools, and this I have spoken yesterday. And there is another genealogy in also in Brazil, the geographs, geographers are a movement in Brazil, not only a specialization, it's a movement. And the other is Carlos Walter Porto Goncalves. It's very nice, this man, you know?
Yes. A little bit.
Ah, a little for me, yeah. Thank you.
What's his last name?
No, he has a book in Spanish.
What's his last name?
Carlos Walter Porto Goncalves. He has a nice book titled Geografías. It's the graphias is to make a mark on the land, geo. It's very nice book. His experience is very different. It's with the Chico Mendes in the jungle, in the Acre state. He works with the people who take the
rubber.
Rubber. You know.
Yeah.
It's the rubbers. And this is a very different genealogy, but they work now together in the same concept of territory. I speak about this because I think they come from the Enlightenment traditions, that the Enlightenment traditions can change himself. Enlightenment tradition, French Revolution. I think the Enlightenment tradition has enough vitality to change itself. Also the other tradition. I think there are not so different traditions. They have different things. For example, the Enlightenment tradition can build it, the women liberation movement. The other tradition not. And also, there are a second thing, the communities. The community is normally a tradition from the indigenous movement or from the old land workers before the Enlightenment. The Victorian in England and Spain and in Spain. Okay. But with the liberation theology, in the Enlightenment culture, they build communities. And we have a lot of communities in the cities, in white people. And then I think with these two things, we can begin a dialogue, and we can learn, and they can learn also. I think it comes in a new
era of dialogue between different traditions. Like Immanuel Wallerstein says, the Chinese tradition, the Chinese culture, and the West culture. There are only two cultures in the world. But in South America, in Latin America, these two cultures has a long relationships. And today, perhaps they are mixed, and you can difference what is this or what comes from the other. And I think this is very nice. Perhaps, I don't know, but perhaps the vitality you observe in Latin America comes from these two traditions has a forced dialogue between 200 years. Perhaps. But it's very nice when the indigenous women has a self-liberation movement. This is very nice. I think these ways, all the white people in the cities have communities. It's different. The indigenous feminism is very different as the white, urban, and academic women movement. It's very different, but it goes.
Well, and I think with the territories in the city, I mean, you see it around the food movement stuff, you know, most overtly. And the community gardens and the communities, we were talking earlier about this. And it was interesting being at the U.S. Social Forum this past summer, which RJ was also at and probably a few other people. And I, in a certain sense, I don't know if this is a disagreement, but I think we don't see a lot of it from my perspective. Like, we see protests, we see the contentious, but we don't see the alternatives sometimes. Like, there are more threads in that carpet that are part of a different tradition than the capitalist state tradition. Maybe you couldn't even build that carpet without all those threads that are produced outside of the capitalist state tradition. It presupposes, yes, and
because
and relies upon.
Foucault says in Biopolitik, this book's discourses about biopolitik, that the power has the ability to use the movement to cut the movement. The same energy for, in Spanish, usar al movimiento para neutralizar al movimiento.
You,
this idea, the capitalist has this ability. And then in the cities, it's more in this way, in the cities, they have this ability, and we don't have, we demand more time for learn this.
Well, you say in the urban peripheries, which is still kind of urban, that there is that kind of territory, right? Like in the Vichy.
No, I think there is not a territory, a really territory. Perhaps in one or two peripheries there are some territories, but speaking about a large urban peripheral territory, I don't think. Perhaps in one neighborhood or in a part of a neighborhood, there is like a territory. But there are different experiences. I think some urban peripheries goes in this way. It's not the same El Alto as Buenos Aires. It's very different. El Alto goes hardly in this way. It's like a territory. Without communities or with other kind of communities. But Buenos Aires, you can find anything here, a factory here, but it's very different. There are islands, not territories. Or how do you say archipelago?
Archipelagos.
Archipelagos. These archipelagos, in some years or centuries, perhaps it comes in territories. But the transition world will be so large, we don't see it.
Volcanoes, you need volcanoes for a good archipelago.
I'm continuing to think about the effort to construct territories and urban peripheries for more controlled areas. I'm curious what your thoughts are on the exchange or circulation between movements or groups in the urban peripheries and those outside, the landless movements or the indigenous movements. You have historical legacy, the urbanization, the migration of people to the cities. But then, for instance, last night you spoke about Oaxaca. You mentioned Oaxaca a little bit, right? So, for instance, I know
in Oaxaca City, you have a situation where sometimes organizations that have large bases outside the city will have a building or two in the city, and there's circulation of people, circulation of ideas, and ultimately a circulation of struggles. So, I don't know, is that relation typical? Does that relation facilitate the construction of autonomies in the urban peripheries, outside? What's the function of that?
Here we have a problem with the words. When I said build a new world or construct relationships, we are thinking in the Enlightenment culture, the development, the progressive. We can build a new world, really. In the past, in the feudal society, the people don't cry, now build the capitalism. Or in the slaves regime of Rome, the people don't say, we will build the feudal society. No. The things goes. If you will build a settlement like an island, only the capitalists build artificial islands. You can build an artificial revolutionary island. Yes? This is a problem. Because we can do nothing now. In some moments, my friend Wallerstein speaks, the world systems go to the end, like this is an automatic, yes. I think the world system ideas is very interesting, but you can don't speak about an automatic, no. No, this is not so. But I think we must work as activists and as thinkers like the gardener. Yes? The gardener has two ways. To make a garden like this in Versailles, the plants have forms as animals, or the Japanese build this thing, this bonsai. One time I was with a gardener and say, I will buy a bonsai. And he looks at me and said, I leave the plants. I don't have both sides. This is to torture the plants. Yes? When you torture the plants for a lot of years, you have a bonsai. Yes? Or the Soviet Union. Yes? Then, if we work as gardeners, what makes a gardener? Perhaps I need help now. A gardener gives a plant only a little bit water, humidity, and a little bit sun, light. Sun and light are in the nature. And one thing is not in the nature. He works with the weeds, taking out the weeds slowly. What do you say in English, escarvillo, the tire to take the plants?
The rake?
Rake is so long with so, and it's for the weeds. Yes.
A hoe.
A hoe?
Yes, a hoe.
Yeah. With the hoe, we can, you must golpear?
Hit.
Under the plant, near the roots, to clean the weeds. Only this is different as what the nature gives us. This hit is like Deleuze said, repetition and
difference.
If you repeat the hits, the difference is coming. But it's not sure. It's like the Nietzsche said, la echada de los dados.
Dice.
Then,
tilling the soil, by the way.
You understand me.
Yes.
Yes. We can do some things for the new world, but we can build it like a building. step by step, piece by piece. This will be horrible. Then, the art of the activist is to know the society, to see what weeds are good weeds and what weeds are necessary to the plant. And your work is not a great work, it's a little work. In the details are the difference between a dictatorship or a man who works for the liberty. Then the plant goes up for itself, not for my work. If I have an ego so big that I think that I can build the plant, the plant goes bigger, I am crazy. I don't understand the nature. And the society in this way is like this kind of nature. Then, we need an ego smaller. And we must have the hopeful and the confidence that the world goes in the right way. Perhaps the world, the society, destroys ourselves. It's a possibility. But we can do anything against this. I think that the Oriental thinkings, the Tao thinkings, they are very interesting for us and are in the same way as Nietzsche and sometimes as Deleuze thinkings. But this is philosophy, and I won't speak about philosophy.
Well, we're coming. We are going to have a reception, by the way. We're going to have things to drink and dip in. That's going to be a few minutes. But maybe we're running out of time. Do we want to have a last?
I'm just wondering, and it doesn't have to be answered, but because it's the Militant Research Group that was part of inviting Raoul, yeah, and the question of methodology and how do you relate as a thinker to a movement, do people want to, like, just explore that a little bit? Like, so, for example, I don't know, Raoul's work, all of his books, if you look at them chronologically, they're related to movements, and I think they're conversations with movements or an intervention in a conversation that's taking place at different times. That's just my observation. But how would you talk about how a thinker at CUNY or wherever relates to a movement, does responsible work with a social movement? Bueno, que ese grupo es parte de un clase, ¿no? De ese militant research. Entonces la relación con el intelectual y los movimientos, ¿cómo? Y de su experiencia personal.
I think also there are some different possibilities. You can work with the movements like a subject that researches the object. It's normally the sociology history. But there are new thinkers in the, like Maturana and Varela and other people who comes from the science, who think that when you observe an other, you are changing the others. Yes? When you observe the nature, when you observe an experiment, the reality is not so. The observer changes the reality. I think the best for me is to thinking in movement, with the movement, but in movement. Not thinking with the movement as organization, with the movement, as moving. And then it's the only possibility to complain anything different. Then you can research in your house or here. You need to be in the movement, with the people. You know this. In your house you can complain nothing or some things, but not the movements. And then you must be in the movement. Then the sociology or the science said, but you are not objective. No, this goes not more. We can't be objective. The science are not objective. The scientifics defends anything different as the reality. Then I think so. You must be in the movement. But thinking in movement is to assume that what I today think tomorrow or in the future can be different because I'm moving. And then I can be like these researchers who said, in 1960 I write this. Now I think the same and the reality, no. Our thinkings are changing with the same ideology or with the same intentionality, but our thinkings are changing because the reality is changing. I am changing. I am not in a crystal isolated. No, I am changing. And 5 years ago when I wrote Dispersing Power, for me Deleuze and Foucault and Clastres were number one. Mm. Now, I think it's very nice, are very nice, but I am looking for the American thinkers, like Silvia Rivera, and people about the movements. Perhaps one night or one afternoon playing with Felipe Quispe is most important than to read Deleuze, because this is thinkers about the reality, the land. And we must discover, how do you say sabios?
Wise people.
Eh?
Wise people.
Wise people. Yeah. In the people's cultures, there are wise men, yes?
Yeah.
And women, also women. But we must discover them. Some people has this ability, has this light, and we must hear them. And it's most interesting to read everything. We can't read books every day, but to discover these special people is not easy. But when you found one of them, you said, here it is. Yes? For example, you can find in Baltimore an old fisherman who has some ideas or some histories. You said, I found it. But this is when you go through the life seeing and with the
hearing.
And hearing. When you go with the books, it's a problem. You don't see nothing. The books are necessary, but after, better after.
All right. Well,
by the book.
Thank you very much.
Raoul's book on territory, Territories and Resistance, is being translated and should be released next year in English.
I hope.
What is the reference, though? Is that about any particular movement or any particular place?
The name in Spanish has two names because there are different presses. One name is Autonomous and Emancipations, Latin American Movement, and the other name is Territories in Resistance.
Is it about any specific movement or about a broad?
It's about 10 or 12 different experiences and then some ideas about these experiences.
Yeah.